Cross-country flights is a learning opportunity without exceeding your limits. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, flight instructor based in the Buffalo, New York area, and the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob's work comes out on the net about every month, usually around the first of the month, and you can find out more at overtheairwaves.com. Bob, thanks very much for joining us today.
Good day, Paul. It's nice to be here.
Bob, you wrote in the most recent edition of Over the Airwaves about a family who are friends of yours who took on a really ambitious cross-country flight. Tell us a little bit about the Perebsky family and what they decided to do.
Jim and Dennis Perebsky and Jim's wife, Phyllis, Dennis's mother, Phyllis, took off earlier this summer in a Piper Warrior, their own airplane, and ventured off to Alaska in a two-week adventure that for them was described as just being a fantastic experience. And the reason I referenced that in Over the Airways is because Jim and Dennis are not terribly experienced pilots. Both had received their pilot's license, their pilot certificate, just a couple of years ago. Jim had recently completed his instrument rating. Dennis is working along on his. Yet they decided to embark upon perhaps one of the most ambitious of all cross-country flights. That's a trip from New York up to Anchorage, Alaska, and they had a wonderful time doing it.
Well, now, when I think about Alaska and flying, I think two things. First of all, it would be a daunting cross-country to plan to get there. And then the second part of it is Alaska is statistically a dangerous place to fly, even for people who do it all the time.
Well, I think I don't want to really speak to the statistics of the accident data because I'm sure there's a lot of factors that we have to take into consideration. But in Dennis's and Jim's particular flight, they did plan it very carefully, and they planned it over the safest routes that can be really traversed going there. They followed the Alaska pipeline up, the Alaska highway up, and those of us who have flown along that route know that there's not a lot of high altitude flying and not a terribly much a great deal of mountain flying. There is some to a certain extent, but again, when properly planned with weather in the best of all worlds in July, it worked out to be a non-hazardous flight.
Okay, now you say you have flown that route, or you made reference to those of us who have flown that route. Tell us about the Alaska Highway and where you pick it up at the southern end and where it dumps you off.
Well, there's a variety of ways of getting there. You can come up through any part of the United States into Canada and pick it up, but just a careful review of the charts will find ways, depending on where you are in the United States, either on the West Coast or on the East Coast, but there are ample charts, ample books, articles written that will provide the pilot with pretty much all of the planning tools that he or she will need to make that trip.
Now, Bob, I know there are a lot of electronic tools available now to someone who is planning a cross-country trip. In the case of a trip to Alaska from Western New York, are there any that would be your favorites? I mean, what would be your process for doing that?
In terms of specific aids or specific books or documents?
Yeah, or even online services.
There's I guess for me the most important thing would be the weather, of course, and then ensuring that we're getting a proper weather briefing and knowing the conditions that we can fly in. And then the Alaska Pilots Association puts out documents that are readily available that will help the pilot plan his or her trip along the most desirable route. AOPA, of course, has resources available to the pilot. There's just an endless array. I think good starting point would just simply go to Google and start Googling under the term flying to Alaska. And then there will be a whole host of references online that will be given to the pilot that they can explore at will.
All right, Bob, I want to take a break real briefly, but when we come back, let's talk about other cross-country trips that a fairly novice pilot could plan and how to get one that'll stretch you without at the same time being over your head. Bob Miller is my guest. You're listening to the special feature from Aero News. We'll be right back.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. And we're talking about cross-country flights based on an article that was in Bob's Over the Airwaves. And it dealt with a family, the members of which were not real experienced pilots, but they undertook a cross-country trip from New York State to Alaska. Bob, I wanted to ask you, maybe, what is the most ambitious cross-country trip you can remember taking? And ambitious, maybe not in terms of absolutes, but in terms of your experience at the time you did it.
Two come to mind, and both were relatively uneventful, both routes. One, of course, flying coast to coast, either west to east or east to west, represents a series of unique opportunities to, you know, vary your or stretch your operating envelope, crossing the Rocky Mountains, for example, making weather calls depending upon the capability of the airplane. And the other are trips to the Bahamas, where we're out over or Central America, where we're out over large areas of open water. A third might be trips into high-density airspace, Atlanta, New York City, the San Francisco Bay, or the L.A. Basin. These two are unique cross-country experiences that stretch the pilot's envelope.
You know, I have made a few cross-country flights, but none anywhere near that length, primarily because it's always involved a rental aircraft. And even when I could afford to to rent the hours, I was concerned that if anything went wrong, I might be stuck on the ground and taking that airplane out of service for a day or two, and just I couldn't take that risk. The result of that is that I know that in my experience as a pilot, and I've only got a couple hundred hours, I have come to take for granted the fact that I will have an intuitive knowledge of the airports to which I'm flying. In other words, I've flown to the same group of airports numerous times, and I know that if I were to plan a flight to a really distant airport, I would have to sharpen up my skills and proficiency in terms of things like interpreting airport diagrams, interfacing with air traffic control, all those things that round you out as a pilot. I want to talk, I guess, a little bit about how to plan a cross-country flight of some distance and find something that'll stretch you but not get you in over your head.
Well, I think one of the concerns that that you're expressing is perhaps not as profound a concern as you might think. Airports, at least wise in the United States, are fairly consistent. The way they're laid out is fairly consistent. Of course, the procedures getting to and out of them, while they do vary, there is a remarkable amount of similarity. I think of a rough analogy of going to my hometown library on day one, and then going to the New York City Library on day three. One is considerably larger than the other, but once inside, you're going to figure out that where is what and how we can find what it is that we're looking for. But in terms of stretching, in terms of planning a cross-country flight, I think this is one of the greatest weaknesses in our primary pilot training curriculum, is that we're not getting pilots out often enough to various airports so that they can build this confidence level. I had a colleague of mine, a former student of mine, was questioning me about the wisdom of taking an RV-9 from Buffalo, New York, up to Massachusetts, around the north side of the Boston-class Bravo airspace. And he was, by his own admission, is a fairly timid pilot. And I think the point that I made that finally persuaded him to go was to simply look at the trip as a series of small cross-country trips from Buffalo to Rochester, Rochester to Syracuse, Syracuse to Albany, and so forth, and look at it as a number of small, more or less bite-sized pieces. This is the way the Perepskis planned their trip to Alaska, by the way. They didn't plan a one-fell-swoop New York to Alaska. They planned a trip from Buffalo to Detroit, from Detroit to St. Louis, St. Louis to North Dakota, and so on, visiting family and friends along the way, so that each leg of the trip itself became a very manageable bite-sized piece of aviation. Putting them all together, of course, you can find yourself all the way around the world.
Well, for someone who is renting an aircraft, is it even feasible to try to plan a trip like what the Perevskys did?
Well, sure. There's only two things required for cross-country flight, long cross-country flight in general aviation, in my opinion. One is time, and the other is money. I mean, this is a true fact of life. Given sufficient time, we can do pretty much what we would want to do, and we need to build in that flexibility. If we're planning a cross-country trip but have to be back for a wedding or an absolute mandatory event, that could add pressure to the trip, and the reality of such, you may not make it back because of weather or mechanical issues. As far as renting the aircraft, I relish the opportunity to rent one of our airplanes to an individual wanting to take a cross-country trip. It puts time on the airplane for the rental agency or the rental school, and it does give folks that are not owners an opportunity to go out and experience longer distance cross-country flight. There, the facts of life for those of us in aviation recognize that airplanes do break. They are down for maintenance, but here we get this notion of sufficient money. Overnight shipping of parts, we can have almost any airplane back in the air the next morning, assuming we're at a capable repair station. So even maintenance downs aren't going to be too terribly long.
All right. Now, speaking as someone who runs a flight school and rents airplanes to people, how do you make an arrangement like that with a student who might get pinned in by weather for an extra day?
Well, that's happened. I mean, we've had students out and pilots, renters out that the weather goes down. That's a risk that we all take. We had an airplane down this spring for 4 days waiting for weather to clear. He was a VFR-only pilot, which does limit or increase the risks. When the pilot is not IFR-capable, then, of course, weather becomes a much larger factor. But here again, we accept the risk in renting airplanes as the pilot accepts the risk in taking them. But again, going back to the time and, frankly, the money, if adequate resources in both of those areas exist, go for it.
Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Bob.
My guest has been Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.